Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California, and currently back home in Los Angeles quarantining for day 2 of 10 after essential travel.
You're one-fifth of the way there if you reduce that fraction. Mm-hmm. I'm Zach Paris. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado, and I'm coming to you live from the year 2021.
2021. When you said that, it did feel kind of futuristic. That is...
It does sound futuristic-y, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I would wonder if some insane things are going to happen this year, but it's hard to... I don't know. I'm just not even going to go there. Not even going to do it. Nope. Instead, we'll just bury ourselves in movies. You've been watching movies, Zach?
I've been watching screen things. I've been watching movies, even.
All right. No spoilers on Wonder Woman. Maybe you're going to talk about it, but I have not yet seen it because I'm not really into comic book films. but it's not true. We are going to watch it. But I did see Soul, and I thought of you because you do all kinds of stuff on vocation and purpose. And are prone to going off on rants about, how you're not supposed to find your one. But like, there's...
Yeah.
So I'm curious, if you had some...
Well, you know, there's been a lot of controversy on the internets. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Matt.
Yes, it does appear divisive. And once again, made me wish I would actually quit social media.
You can't quit. Matt, and I have a hot take on Soul, and it actually, I don't think it's too related to vocation or purpose, or...
Oh, come on.
I know. So here's...
I thought you were going to get back on your horse. Come on.
I mean, right, so the controversy about Soul, right, is tied up in race stuff, right? Because there's a black man character, and they get abstracted from their bodies into these soul creatures that are blue and don't seem to have race, or skin color at least, and then Liz Lemon inhabits the body for a while, and Liz Lemon, of course, is a middle-aged white lady. And so there's fair enough critique in that, Matt. But here's my hot take, okay? My hot take is, first I start with a lukewarm take, which is I don't know that all films or all pieces of art can fully comment upon all facets of human society. Okay, I don't know if that's the point of each individual work of
art. Chris, somebody posted, this movie will change your life, and Chris was like, I thought it was good, but I didn't, do you really think it would change your life? And I was like, I feel like I've reached the age where I don't actually think any work of art is going to completely change my life. I found it moving. I enjoy it. But, do I think that any work of art is going to change? I'm kind of past that point, I feel like. Which is maybe a little sad for me, but when I was 20, I would have told you, this song will change your life.
And put the headphones forcibly on someone's head from behind.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, a part of my hot take is a response to some of the criticisms I've seen on the internet. But I think a part of what they were trying to do with the film, right, is make a really important part of it for the creators here was to have this, like, existence of a universal, like, soul, that we all have souls, and that there's in our... This is a classic, you know, religious thing, right? The relationship between the idea of a soul and a body, right? Soul in Sark's. And the central to the big point that the movie's trying to make, it needs us all to have souls that exist apart from our bodies, which in their world, right, because souls are diametrically opposite of our... exist outside of our bodies, then race would not be a part of that, right? And so you needed to have a universal soul sort of thing that lies underneath of the human constructs of race, etc., which is all fine, Matt, except I don't think I believe in souls. So, it's a part of my eco thing, right? It's a denigration of the body to say that there is, or the corporeal world, that there is a more important part of you that's not your physical body. Who knows if there is a soul, Matt? I would say that if there is a soul, it is inextricably connected to our human bodies. And so you can't just, like, zap. So you can't do body changes, which is, Matt, it turns out, a big part of movie Soul and Wonder Woman 84.
And I can't do astral projections like Doctor Strange, I thought. Man.
I mean, I did. I was really thinking of that. Oh, gosh, what's the song about astral? Gosh, come on. It's a really good song. Astral. I'll come up with it. But that's my hot take, Matt. It promotes a worldview that denigrates the creation, God's creation, human bodies, etc., because it glorifies the soul.
Yeah, that's an interesting.
Valerie June's astral plane is what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I was like, he's not talking about Valerie June's astral plane, but he is.
I am thinking of Valerie June's astral plane.
The astral plane. Oh, she's so good. Yeah. I mean, my first thought when you were going into your hot take was that the nature of souls wasn't actually the point of the movie. The point of the movie was like, what are we doing here? What's the purpose of this? And then this was like the vehicle that they used to then explore some of these things, right? But when you talk about, like, can you separate that from other aspects of our identity, right? To pull that blue soul out of a black or white or brown body, that's good. That's interesting.
It's not a blame. I mean, it's not without its. There is a. out to defend, to do an apology for the film. They do place an emphasis on how important life on Earth is, right? Like, they're trying to talk 22 into, like, life is worth living. My other take at the end was, like, whoa, I thought he, like. The. Gosh, what's the main character's name?
Joe Gardner.
Joe Gardner. Committed suicide. You know, like, there's this, like, window where you're like, he's like, you could see it, him like martyring himself for 22 or whatever, like this stuff. And I was like, wow, if he commits suicide at the end of this movie, that's pretty heavy, even for like a heavy cartoon. Like, wow.
At what point did you think he was committing suicide? When he jumps?
Well, when he like tries to give the he gives the Earth Patch spoilers back to 22, and he's going on to the great beyond, and he like chose to do that, which I mean,
yeah, we were watching him go to the light, and my brothers were like, no, if he dies here, this movie is they can't just let him die. And I was like, no, actually, it'd make the sacrifice more, you know, give some. Yeah, it's, I mean, my take is that, part of it is that I don't want to have a take. I feel like I'm going to let folks speak about their experience of this movie. I feel like, it's not Black Panther, right? Like, Black Panther's like, okay, let's do the first Black Marvel superhero.
I actually sat down and halfway through, I was like, wait a second, this isn't Black Panther, is it?
Right? Like, we're going to do first Black superhero, this is going to be... just the blackest movie that you have seen. Like, it just, and there's a space for, like, that's great, like, if that's what the movie was setting out to do. But I think people saw, hey, it's the first, like, black Pixar protagonist, and I don't know if Disney promoted that too or what, but, you know, that started to become part of the narrative, and it doesn't appear that that was really the point of this movie, right? This is a Pete Docter movie, and so you gotta think about Up and Inside Out and the kind of questions that he likes to explore, and the fact that he's a black character is not, like, central to the plot of the story, right? Like, it's actually cool that it's like, no, like, this is another human experience, and so, like, we're gonna include aspects of that human experience, but it's not really about, like, the core of it is not really about the black experience, even though it took the black experience seriously in a number of ways, including, I found that Questlove was played the drummer, which is fun.
That is super fun.
and John Batiste played those beautiful piano keys. So there was some good stuff there. But it's a fair, I mean, it's a fair critique. I did feel like when folks started posting this, I was like, oh, did Tina Fey get canceled? I missed it. I feel like I've not been up on my, like, cancellation list. And then I started doing some, and I was like, oh, okay, so she did some stuff. And I'm like, I can't keep up with this shit anymore. Like, I like their, I just can't. Like, there's a middle-aged white woman. Guess what? I'm a middle-aged white person. And I don't, like, in my church, middle-aged white people exist next to black people. Like, it's a thing that exists. So I don't actually have a problem with that existing in movies. But I do, like, it's a fair critique that, like, oh yeah, so then they're just gonna become blue people or inhabit a cat. The cat was surprising. I did not realize the role that a cat was going to play in this movie. That was, I don't know why we need a animal sidekick, but, you know, fair critique, fine. You know, I get it. It's not Black Panther. If you're looking for Black Panther, that's not what it is. But I do think it included some positive steps toward representation. But really, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting choice to, like, be like, to think about purpose and what it means, and had a tear-jerking montage, which you knew was going to come at some point. And then when they dropped it, I was like, oh, yeah.
It's kind of like preaching. Hey, look at this. We're bringing it back. We're tying it in. Matt, if you just took one of the sermons that I would preach in a year and try to judge that, like, judge me as a preacher on the totality of that one sermon and all the things it's not going to address, I don't know that that's going to be super fair or representative of, like, your sermon shouldn't, right? Like, you shouldn't, like, who is it who has to, like, preach with the Bible on one hand, the newspaper in the other?
Niebuhr, I think.
Niebuhr? I mean, that's...
Nate, it's... Maybe it's Bart. I think it's Bart.
That does sound like Bart. to be fair, he preached with a Swiss newspaper from his hand because he disengaged from the struggle. But he doesn't say preach with the Bible on one hand and then make sure you touch on every single story in the newspaper before you sit down in every sermon.
I do just want to make clear, like, I don't want to be the two white people defending the white person that made this movie. Like, it's a fair critique. Yeah. Take the critique. Like, I think it's a fair critique. I had found other things to appreciate in the movie. And I don't know. I'll leave it there.
I mean, I think that, like, in some ways, again, like, wanting to be fully aware of two white guys on a podcast talking about black people, that a piece of art like race and racism heavily shape black life in America, and yet there are other parts, like, black people do really boring mundane things like everybody else, right? Like, right. Like when they brush their teeth, it's not, you know, so to have, like, it's important for, we need Black Panther. Black Panther needs to exist. It's important that it does. And we need art like Black Panther. But we also, it's only fair, I think, and helpful to have art about, like, black people also struggle with questions that other people struggle with, right? About purpose and meaning of life and all that kind of stuff that's as well, you know? There you go.
Yeah. And Pixar should just hand the reins over to more black creators. Like, go
give them to Shonda.
That's just, you know? Right.
We're all living in Shondaland now.
Is it our transition to Bridgerton?
It must be. We're telling Bridgerton.
Like, this started as a show, from in my experience, and Matt's experience. This was a show that Chris was watching secretly while I engaged with my family back home. Chris would retreat to the bedroom and watch Bridgerton.
That's why she's Chris, PhD.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And then I discovered that both Zach and Adam have been watching the show. And I was like, well, now I got to get caught up on what this is. And then we watched several episodes, and Chris said, I enjoyed this more when it was just my thing. So, we'll see if I watch season two. I don't know. I did enjoy it, though. I mean, well acted, diverse cast, right? Which is not, like, it's like not historically accurate, but we're just gonna, like, mix it up, which is actually good, right? Because a lot of times we've had very not historically accurate stuff happening that was not diverse. So to have the opposite is, like, good. I think it's good.
It's kind of in that same vein of Soul, where, like, there is, like, one episode, like, five or six or so, when Lady Danbury, like, has, like, a short little, like, monologue that she gives to the Duke about how, like, about racial representation and stuff. And that's the only, like, only time anybody, like, explicitly mentions it or it seems to play any role. Which is fine. Again, it's not Black Panther, but also kind of just fun to see, like...
Right.
It also kind of exposes the... if you have not watched Bridgerton or have any idea what we're talking about, set in, what, early 1800s, 18, like, aughts or so, George III, your classic sort of, you know, English period piece in London, covering the mating season, the... they call it the season over and over again. They never give a name for the season. Courting? I don't know. But all the characters, like, just a super randomly, like, racially diverse cast of characters, which also help reveal that, like, even when it's all Lily White folks acting out these historic dramas, they're not real either. That's not really...
Right.
Those are also fiction.
Right. Yeah.
So... Yeah, Shonda Rhimes, her first offering there on Netflix with her big Netflix deal. Shondaland.
Yeah. Amazing. Well,
I've got a couple of issues, though, Matt. With Bridgerton, that's important for our listeners to know about. Number one, I'm not going to spoil it. Well, I was super invested in the will they, won't they of the Duke and Daphne. That came to a conclusion in the middle of the season. I was happy. I was ready to walk away from the show because that's fine. That was what I was invested in. That was the conflict. It was resolved. And then the only thing I kept going is that there's this lady Whistledown who is writing and publishing secretly under a pen name this tabloid newspaper magazine that is driving London society wild. And there's a whole guessing game of who is Lady Whistledown. And they reveal Lady Whistledown... at the end, and I'm going to talk about this in the best way I can without spoiling it. I didn't find it convincing, Matt.
You didn't find it convincing?
No.
I mean, she must have done such an acting job. Like, cause she seems to play one character, and then she's a completely different character when she writes these.
It seems very disconnected, I would say for sure.
But she'd probably have to be if this was real. Like, she couldn't... Otherwise, they'd be like, well, clearly it's...
The other thing is a little practical. The printing press has only been invented for a couple hundred years. And I believe you had to pay to get things printed. Who was paying for, who was underwriting? Because it's a free publication. They keep saying, they're just giving these things out for free. Who is paying for this? Right? Like, and I'm not convinced that this character has the means to just casually and secretly fund the most important periodical in London.
Apparently the show is not interested in answering that question.
No, not at all.
Very disappointing.
And lastly, Matt, we should note that the central character's absolute lack of understanding of human physiology is insane, Matt. It's just remarkable. That she has to ask literally how do you make a baby, right? Mm-hmm. Post-sex, she asks her maid that. Like, she's engaging in the activity, but then has some follow-up questions about the biology of what's happening. Like, who... I know we like to lift up, like, you know, you think about, this isn't Victorian times, right? But, like, the sort of Victorian ideal of not talking about these things and, like, purity and stuff, right? But the reality, you know, is that, like, that was never the reality. It was an ideal. It's the idea that you're involved and you go to a ball every night and no one ever mentions to you sex. Like, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, it's the importance of sex education. You know, that's really what this season one is about.
It's true. It's true, man. Yeah. So you have not seen, Matt, I'm hearing, World War 84.
No, I have not. Haven't seen it. Got to make some time for it.
Matt, again, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I've got some questions. Number one, they did not do a good enough job flashing back to the first one. Chris Pine, is that's his name, right?
Yeah.
He shows
one
up.
One of the Chris's.
Yeah, one of the Chris's. He shows up, and you're supposed to just know who he is.
Did you not see the first one?
I definitely saw the first one. I still, Matt, have literally no idea what happened, other than I'm guessing that there was a relationship between Gal Gadot and Chris Pine, and that it, like, ended. It sounds like maybe he died or something. I don't know.
Well, Thanos snapped his fingers, and it's a whole thing.
Oh, that's happened. What they're referring to?
I feel like what would be better is if just in every movie she was with a different Chris. Like, ooh, that would be
good.
They should just start that.
So I wasn't even confused. I was just like, I mean, I trust you. I guess they were, whatever, let's keep going. So then, Matt, major plot point is essentially they find this object that grants wishes. Okay. Kind of a genie in the bottle sort of thing. And we got Kristen Wiig, we've got Gal Gadot, and independently of other, they kind of jokingly make wishes. And they realize in the coming days that those jokes that they made, because they thought it was a fraudulent artifact, start to become true, right? From there, Pedro Pascal, who's having a moment, Matt, he was in...
The Mandalorian.
He's the main character here. He was in the new Netflix film, We Can Be Heroes.
Oh, yeah. Did you watch that?
I've watched it. Did you watch it?
No, it looked fun.
I made a joke about Jacob Dylan at the beginning in The Wallflowers, and then they repeatedly hit that joke throughout the movie. He's in that. He's like a big character in that movie. It's crazy. So anyway, he becomes a genie, basically, and so Gal Gadot has to figure out how to stop him, right? And Kristen Wiig and her are on kind of the same team at the beginning, and they're, like, fighting him. But the thing that never happened, Matt, it made me feel like I was high while I was watching it, right? I assumed that it just happened, and I just zoned out and missed it. Kristen Wiig and Gal Gadot never have a conversation about, hey, this thing works. Like, this thing actually makes wishes come true. They just, like, at some point they see each other and they're just, like, both completely on the same page that this is a magic rock and that this is all real. They never actually articulate that, like, hey, I now have your superpowers and my dead boyfriend is back. They just keep going. It's just, like, zoom right past it, right? Kristen Wiig is fantastic in the film. But then here's the more serious one, Matt. More serious critique. Gal Gadot's boyfriend, Chris Pine, comes back, but he can't just come back, like, full resurrection. His soul comes back. We're back to soul. And inhabits the body of another human. Okay? And so for, like, a week, this dude, Gal Gadot, sees Chris Pine, but everybody else sees the body of the actual human. I'm pretty sure this is a crime. It's body theft. Right? They make sweet, sweet love to one another. If you're the boyfriend, the girlfriend or boyfriend of that character who gets body inherited, did they cheat on you this week? I don't know. There are a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of ethical quandaries. We need to get the Valpo Ethics Bowl team to really dig down deep into World War 84 to figure out what's going on and what's okay or not okay here. Your body, your choice.
Because I was on the Valpo Ethics Bowl team back in the early 2000s. I had a run where we stormed.
Stormed
was the word the local newspaper, and by local newspaper I mean student newspaper, used to describe.
Every newspaper is local if you have a wide enough horizon.
Oh, we stormed the national championships. I came in second place. Yeah, I could get the band back together, you know? Maybe I'll have to do that.
That would be a fun episode of the podcast.
Beats body.
Who beat you?
I don't remember.
The Bad Boy Pistons, probably.
Yeah, that's the problem with college, you know? You only get so many years to go up against and finally beat your nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
But we could have done it. If only we'd had more time. losing to Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Not even the...
Corpus Christi. Not even...
Not College Station.
Not College Station. Corpus Christi. Look, the Ethics Bowl championship teams are really on the margins of the NCAA, all right? We're not, like, talking Valpo. We're talking Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I mean, this is, you know...
We're talking $2
Indiana,
handshakes.
Indiana University margins.
Wow. Well,
this is a real thing, though. This is a real thing.
It's a real thing. That's all facts. This podcast trades in nothing but stone cold facts. I did watch my last bit. I watched NBC's Rose Parade special on New Year's morning, Matt, and they they had one segment talking about the coronavirus, COVID, with inspirational music in the background, and they went around to lots of different, like, kind of NBC-related talking heads. And the guy who does Dateline...
Stone Phillips?
Not Stone Phillips. The, like, a little more To Catch a Predator-ish episodes of... Not he's not the To Catch a Predator guy, because he got caught because he was a predator. But this other guy, who wasn't far away from him on that newscaster spectrum, had a line where he was like, people just craved human contact. And said it in his, like, gross, I'm about to talk about a grisly murder voice. And he was followed up by the host of American Ninja Warrior. Because who's going to give you insight and perspective into this COVID-19 pandemic? Deeper than the host of American Ninja Warrior.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. I did not watch that, and now do not wish I had.
Well, Matt, it's been 30 minutes of Vinyl Preacher at the movies. We have an option here. We could talk about the text or, you know, keep going. Keep digging in deeper.
First reading today. No disputes, at least, I don't think. It's just the same text in the Episcopal Church.
We have consensus readings this week.
All right, we're back on the same track. Oh, wow. Well, Genesis, here we are. Second Sunday of the new year. And we've got Genesis 1:1-5. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. Word of God, word of life.
Great.
Not a lot to say. Not a lot to say about it.
I mean, it's great. I
think they cut all the other stuff. I think you get, like, the whole creation story, lectionary. Is it this year? It might actually be this year. Year A in the summer. One of the summers. Mm-hmm. You get Genesis.
Yeah.
And you get the whole long creation story. And this one, they just focus on light and darkness. Because I guess that's where we're at. Which is not problematic at all. But at least here, it's, you know, we're not talking about skin color. It's clearly the sun and the night.
Matt, I think I'm ready to go on the record on this. I think that this is the worst Sunday in the lectionary. Baptism of Jesus, because it already starts here, Matt. We get the start of Genesis, which is great. I love Genesis, right? I enjoy preaching the creation accounts. There's a lot there, you know. But I'm preaching tomorrow morning, January 3rd, on the assigned text for the day, which means I'm preaching on John 1, which is all about light and dark already. Okay, this is worse than being caught up in that, like, bread. There's that, like, that bread bread month that happens, where you get bread of life, bread of bread every week in the summer. But we got redux on light and dark here. And spoilers here as we look at Mark 1, because this technically is a festival holiday. It's the baptism of Jesus. We get the baptism of Jesus from Mark, which we've already heard. You know, we heard baptism. We heard John the Baptizer out in the wilderness the second week of Advent. And the third week of Advent, we heard Matthew's version of the story. And last week, John 1, you get John the Baptizer in the wilderness in John, though it's not exactly the same. How many times are we going to hear the baptism of Jesus story without getting another quality reading from the Apocrypha?
Yeah, without the Apocrypha. Well, you don't get exactly the same reading. What you get in Mark is you get, like, the camera lens, and you get this overlap. So in Advent, you just get this first part. In fact, it goes back a little bit earlier. So you get Mark 1, 1 to 11. And then here at the beginning of the Epiphany season, I'm going to call it a season. Take that, Kevin Strickland. The lens shifts a little bit, and you get a little bit of Venn diagram overlap, and then you get something new. You get Jesus' baptism. And then when you get to the first Sunday of Lent, the lens is going to shift again, and you're going to get the baptism part again, but then you're going to also get something new at the end. You're going to get Jesus driven into the wilderness. So you get this same text, but the lens moves, but this baptism is here at the center of it, at the heart of it. And I have just found that really, I just think that's really interesting. Something's going on with this text. And if you really wanted to carry a consistent thread from Advent through Lent, you could do it. Like, this is a little marker here that exists in three critical spots. You can do it in December, January, and February. And do it a little bit differently, because the focus shifts for each one, even though it's the same text. It's good stuff. I can't believe you're not more excited about it.
You did not convince me. I'll just read the addendum here in the service of brevity. The interesting part here is the baptism of Jesus. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And just as he was coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove upon him. And a voice from heaven came and said, "You are my Son, the Beloved, and with you I am well pleased." There you go.
There it is.
You forced me to do this, Matt, and I'm going to focus on that part. And I am, you know, I do like a lot of the directions that Soul took on, like, not having singular, like, purpose or and stuff, right? And it turns out I did a little word study. You're not going to believe it, Matt. But the word that gets translated as a dove, descending on dove on him, gets translated just the same in other places as pigeon. So a pigeon could have descended upon him. And I think I would play with and lean into the image of the Holy Spirit as a pigeon, because I, Matt, have never seen, we had a birding period. I bought a couple bird feeders at the beginning of the pandemic. But I don't know that I've ever seen a dove in the wild. I've seen them at magic shows coming out of hats. I've seen them at cheesy weddings. I did not see one today.
I saw it at a funeral once.
Wow.
Yeah. Did it was the thing, yeah.
Dive into the cat. It's the opposite.
You would think.
Soul fluttering away. But I've seen a hell of a lot of pigeons, Matt. Pigeons all over the place, and they're not perfect and pure and white. And I think there's something to lifting up. I mean, that's of the baptismal vocational theology. Is much more like pigeons than it is like doves, all over the place, you know, akin to a pizza rat instead of like
pizza rat. Also in soul.
Oh, that's my interesting perspective I take have on it.
Yeah. I should give that some more thought after a year in which I got into birds and bird watching. Mm-hmm. Which just tells you everything you needed to know about 2020.
God is just like Portlandia. Put a bird on it. Gosh.
Put a bird on it. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like, what direction should we go? So I think, let's go here. So you want to talk about, you have some notes in here on important elements of baptism.
I do. It's very clear here that there's some really essential points to baptism. I also, in our Google Doc, Matt, there's an Acts reading for the day.
We didn't even talk about that.
What I
That's
find to be
weird.
A dearth of things of material to work with, I would throw in some Acts here because I think it can be helpful and paints a fuller picture of what baptism looks like. You've got Paul passing through the regions of Ephesus, and he found some disciples, and he said to them, "Did you receive the Spirit when you became believers?" And they said, "No." And he said, "Well, we've not even heard that there is a Spirit." Love that line.
What?
That's something my four-year-old would say to me. "I haven't even heard of that. I already knew about..." She had to go hard the other way. "Yes, obviously, I've heard about the Spirit like 100 times. And then he said, "Into what then were you baptized?" And they said, "Into John's baptism." And Paul says, "Well, John clearly has an inferior baptism. He baptizes with a baptism of repentance and telling the people to believe in the ones to come after him, that is, Jesus." And on hearing this, they were baptized again, rebaptized in the name of the Lord Jesus. And when Paul laid his hands upon him, the Holy Spirit came upon them, and they spoke in tongues and prophesied. And altogether, there were about 12 of them. So the Spirit here for Paul seems to be really important, but I would lift up a counterpoint contained in the text. This is Paul's question. Did you receive the Holy Spirit when you became believers? Believers isn't perfect here. It's actually a participle. When you were believing or having faith is the way to do that. And so for all the times, Matt, that we get tied up in making sure that a baptism is right, they were already having faith. Got it? They were already believers. I hate the word believers. They were already, you know, before they got the right baptism, they got rebaptized by Paul.
They got rebaptized. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane. I don't like. It's a strange story. I think you could do it. I mean, I feel like, sure. I think you gotta like skate over the weirdness and somehow talk about the Spirit. Don't forget the Holy Spirit. Remember the Spirit. I don't know where you go with that, but you gotta do something with it, I guess. But like, what? We've not even heard. Like, what is this? I don't know. I guess they're trying to just reinforce what John was saying in the first place, which we get here again in Mark. Which is fine. Although, fun fact, is this an important element of baptism for you and the baptisms that you have done after you lay your hands on them? They speak in tongues and prophesy? Like, is that a thing that typically happens?
I don't like to use the podcast, Matt, as a platform to be braggadocious, you know? I find that our audience connects more to me
when I'm
humble. But I am batting 1,000 in baptisms. Even infants speak clearly in tongues upon my baptisms. Is that not the case for you?
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. I mean, there are Christian traditions that, you know, lift up speaking in tongues is pretty core to the faith, but it just seems odd. If we're talking about, like, here's some elements of a baptism. I don't know. I've never seen this. Have I been doing it wrong? What am I doing wrong?
Well, Matt, here's a way to play with that language that might be helpful. Tongues, speaking in tongues, you know, typically is, you know, it's thought of to be like, you'll see it in the YouTube clips or on the TV, right? People are just like Tower of Babel stuff, like
sure.
Making up words, right? Nonsense stuff. Perhaps what a better way, a more helpful way to understand it would be to say that upon baptism, you are so reoriented with the world, your orientation is so flipped upside down that the words you speak now no longer make any sense, right? And get a little preachy here, right? But it's to say, like, you know, it's that, like, hey, we're living in a terrible pandemic and things are really awful, and having hope and stuff would be like speaking in tongues. That's what I'm going to give you.
It's better. Still not sure I've ever seen it happen, but better. Works for preaching.
That's all it's got to do.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and then these other elements of baptism. I feel like you want to make a case for immersion here.
Well, I mean, Jesus, he needs a whole river to be baptized in, not a basin. They have them, right? There are plenty of biblical stories where they had basins laying around, or a well, or a cup. But no, the baptism requires a river, and I believe that's going to be, you're not going to get a spoonful of water out of a river.
I believe that you recently sent us a picture of a basin with, like, a water heater inside of the water. Of your bath. And Chris's, my response was, oh, like, that's clearly just something that you heat a horse trough with, you know? And Chris was like, why does he have that electrical thing in a bathtub?
yeah.
I knew what it was. I mean, I'm going to redeem minister of board in sacrament. I know what that is.
Like, if you call yourself a pastor and you don't know what a bucket heater looks like, question the seminary you went to. Yes, no, our hot water heater went out on Christmas Eve, and our child smelled terrible, so we needed bath night to happen, and so we broke out my baptismal hot water heater, and it kind of worked.
Scale of 1 to 10, how excited were you that this thing came in handy?
Oh, like a 10, for sure. 9, you know. Like, if I didn't have to actually give the bath afterwards, that would have been a 10, but...
Oh, my gosh. So, the other craziness, like, so Jesus comes up. We're looking at baptism. Jesus comes up out of the water. He sees the heavens torn apart, the Spirit dive-bombing him like a pigeon. And then he hears a voice from heaven, which I picture like the sorting hat in Harry Potter that just speaks to you and only you can hear it. You are my son, the beloved. With you, I am well pleased. Is this... Am I to also expect this from baptisms? Like, what parts of this should be true for all baptisms, and what parts of this are true only for Jesus' baptism?
Oh, Matt, why are you going to ask, like, a deep question towards the end of the podcast? I mean, so you're, like, you're kind of opening it. We're at least looking, and we're opening and looking into a door here where you could go to talk about, like, what, like, did Jesus need to be baptized? Why is Jesus baptized? There's a lot of questions and conversation to have there that I don't know if it helps your preaching in any way, so I'm going to not talk about them. But, well, maybe I'm not going to not talk about them. I'm going to talk about a little bit of them. I think the baptism of Jesus is different than our baptisms. How about that? That there's something different happening here. And so this is not the standard for baptism. You know, go to that Acts reading of, like, they had to redo it up there. And I think they had to redo it unnecessarily, you know, given that they were already... quote unquote believers. Again, I hate the word believers, and I come up with another word for that. But what this is doing is identifying Jesus more than it is. And sure, baptism for us is about identity formation as well. But I think it's different for Jesus, and I've not articulated very well how it's different.
And I'm going to take the opposite position, say that it is like our baptisms. There's probably a spectrum, but I'm going to lean on that side just for the sake of
people come to this podcast for hot
two
takes.
Different people on a podcast. If we're going to agree all the time, you just have one person speaking into a fancy mic. So, I mean, I wonder, I do like to emphasize this, you are my child. Beloved, with you I'm well pleased. I always like to, I feel like it's like good news for the congregation when I preach on a text like this. But then I wonder about some of these other things that seem weird and like maybe they don't happen. But maybe these stories are a lens for us to understand what actually is happening in our baptism that maybe we haven't seen as clearly. Maybe this is a revelation of some things that are going on. And the more that we look back, the more that we unpack what's happening in baptism, the more that we see some of these things. And maybe most importantly, if we're talking about, if one of the purposes of preaching is to think about who God is and what God is up to, I was really struck reading this text from Genesis again, very unfamiliar text, and realizing maybe for the first time that these are God's first words. Like, if you didn't know this story and how it was going to go, and you just knew that there were a bunch of gods out there, and this book is going to tell you something about this God. Okay, the first sentence, who knows who this God, like, the earth is a formless void, darkness covers the face of the deep, a wind from God sweeps over the face of the waters. We don't know who this character is or how this character is going to manifest. And God's first words are, let there be light. They're not words of destruction. They're not words of anger. They're not words of violence. They're words of creation and words of illumination. Let there be light. We learn something about this God. And then here, at this baptism, God speaks from the heavens again. And here again, God's words are not even like John the Baptist's words. God doesn't even say repent here as God's first words. We imagine that that's something God says. But like here, God's words, if God's going to say one thing first, God opens God's mouth. God says, you are my child, the beloved. With you, I am well pleased. They're words of affirmation. And love. And that's a powerful thing to start there if we're thinking about who we are beloved. And start there. Wherever you go from there, well, you can talk about that in a future sermon. But maybe we need to start here.
I like it, Matt. Just a fun note, you know, cutting room floor sort of thing that I wouldn't put in a sermon, is that I read a thing this week that... there was a reminder that when you hear the kind of like son of language that gets used here a bit, you are my son, it's not necessarily, it is not first establishing like a genetic connection among people even, right? But it is unpoetically a way of saying like of the same substance, like of you have the characteristics, like you would say son of God of the emperor, right? Because they are like God. Never saying like Caesar is born of God, like not in a kind of Trinitarian way that we think about Jesus being son of God sometimes. But it is a way to say that this person has all the characteristics of God. And so that there's a way, I mean, I think my real surprise on this podcast, my real answer to the question that I posed is going to be nuanced here, that there are ways that this is like our baptism and is not like our baptism. that on one hand, we are in our baptism reminded that we share the characteristics of God, made in the image of God, that's going to come a couple verses later in Genesis. But there's also a very particular way that's a little more towards that lack of difference between Jesus and God, though we're in the Gospel of Mark, who has the most human Jesus of all, so maybe I'm just completely full of it. So,
are you saying it's both and?
Shut up. I saw, Matt, on the internet that you got a record player, the new record player's in.
It is, and I was so excited. I filmed an unboxing.
Did you? Where can the listeners? I haven't seen the unboxing.
I don't know. I was like, I should film this because I'm so excited. It's so cool. You had to put the belt on yourself, you know, which feels really unnecessary, but also like kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's like super. Like, you can get turntables that are much more like you push a button and the needle lifts and goes to where it needs to go. And this is not that. Like, it's.
Yeah.
Like, I had to get an extra little part for it to, like, raise up gently. I don't know. It's just super cool. I did play the first U2 record as my first record, which I'd planned to do. I was like, this should be the first. So I did that. And then I listened to some Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings this morning. That was really great. Here's my first just joy at the record player. So here, and someday this is going to be a sermon, but I don't know how or when yet. But, you know, when you drop, that, like, when you're going to play a song on, like, Spotify, you push play and it starts playing.
Boom.
But on a record, like, you drop the needle, and you don't know when exactly. Like, there's this moment. There's, like, this pregnant moment of waiting.
Kairos,
it's almost like it's like extra time in soccer that we've talked about before, right? But there's, like, this extra, like, this moment, and you don't know when it's going to come in. And so the moment when it comes, I just find it such a, like, it puts this huge smile on my face every time, because, like, you drop the needle. But nothing happens just yet. And then all of a sudden, here it is. It just kind of arises, right? it's such a, I don't feel like I've heard anybody talk about that. Like, they're always like, oh, the music is so much warmer, it's better quality, blah, blah, blah. And maybe that's true, but right now, I'm just focused on, like, that little moment of, like, waiting for the music to start, right? It's just such a, I just love it. I think it's great. So I'm enjoying my new record player.
I got some vinyl Christmas presents, Matt.
Yeah, I've
talked, of course, a lot about Dr. Dan, who helped me fix up my my console stereo. I got the vinyl spouse gave me this storage thing. It's pretty cool. You can kind of see it there, the back, Matt, sitting on top of the console for storing your LPs in a way. Storing the LPs is a hard thing, right? Because you want to, one, show them all off because they're all beautiful. Right, you also want to like have access to them and stuff. So it's this like kind of invisible state, and they need to stand up, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I got that, and then I got a gift card to my local record store. And so I've been so excited about the new record player that I went first day after Christmas that they were open, and I needed to spend it all immediately. And I had to wait for like 45 minutes to get in the door because they were like.
Yeah,
I hadn't been to the record store since the pandemic started, Matt, and it's not the ideal business for pandemic, because normally, right, you go into the record store and you just browse,
right?
Yeah. But they were limited to like four people in the store at a time, and so like there's like this pressure to like, oh, I mean, I don't want to like, I had to wait 45 minutes to get in. I don't want like the other people in line outside. I just I gotta go. And so I ended up getting I had things I wanted. I couldn't find them, but we were buying stuff. You know, I'd invested so much time that I got. I'm excited about it. I got Vampire Weekend's Father of the Bride.
Oh, nice.
And I got Haim's debut album. Which is actually a 45. Full size. Wow. It was interesting because I put it on. So it looks like a 33. I put it on, started playing it, and I was like, wow, I maybe like on this like there's got like extra bonus tracks of like these different mixes, because it was like a slow jam. And then I was like, oh no, it's not a 33, it's 45. So, and it sounded great. So it's been fun.
Yeah. that's good to know. On mine, you have to actually like move the belt to a different, like,
oh, wow.
You have to adjust the belt for a 45. And I was like, okay. Fortunately, I mostly have 33s, but yeah, that's a good distinction. You got to know whether you're working with a 33 and a 30.
I assumed all 45s were little, but they're not.
Right? Good to know. Wow.
You know?
Learn something new every day.
I do remember the next step in like hipsterdom, Matt, hipster fatherdom, is to get. I remember having books that had like the companion 45. They went with them, you know, is that I need to find like a book that comes with a companion 45 that I can parent with.
Good luck.
Thank you. Matt, what are you listening to this Baptism of Jesus?
Well, since you're talking about pigeons and I listen to a lot of Sesame Street music, I couldn't help.
That's
but think
what
of
this
Bert
is. I didn't know what it
doing
was.
Doing the pigeon. Bert, fun fact, loves pigeons. He also loves oatmeal and his bottle cap collection. Also, paperclip collection, I think. He's into really exciting stuff.
I saw that.
But he
it's
loves
Christmas
pigeons,
special.
And so he's got a song called Doing the Pigeon.
Love it, Matt.
I also, Eddie Vedder, I went through some of the new releases. Eddie Vedder just put out an acoustic cover of Bruce Springsteen's Growing Up, which is one of my favorite Springsteen songs. And as we think about Jesus now stepping into this new phase of his ministry, here's Growing Up, Eddie Vedder's cover of Springsteen. And then Brandi Carlile put out new music on January 1st. I don't know if you're a Brandi Carlile fan or not, but she put out a cover of Black Hole Sun.
I did not see this, but I'm really excited for it.
So, you know, as you're thinking about the heavens torn open, Black Hole Sun, won't you come and wash away the rain?
Cool. I gotta tell you, Matt, unrelated to the podcast or the playlist or the text this week, the past week my daughter has really gotten into the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I don't remember why or how like she first heard them. Gosh, why was it? Oh, we were carpool karaoke. We were flipping through some carpool karaoke so that she started to kind of like now. And we landed on it, and she just like loved them. And so
I have, in the past week, watched every single official video of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. She's asking for them by name. She took her a while to sort out the, like, word order. Red Chili Hot Peppers, all that kind of stuff. Now, nailing it, and so that's been fun. That said, Matt, they're not on my playlist. I am, of course, with the Doves. I'm going to go Dove song. I'm going to go When Doves Cry by Prince off of Purple Rain. Then, Matt, throwing it back to the 90s, Toad the Wet Sprocket. Something's always... I almost got it, but then I did not. Something's Always Wrong, which is, you know, ties into the Axe ring. That's what's going on. And then I revisited, Matt, a little over a year ago. I put some sort of a comment on Facebook at how much I enjoyed songs with titles about rivers or the subject of rivers, and it spurred this like 30-40 comments of people leaving their favorite river songs, and I was like, this is baptism, I'm gonna go back to that and I'll find something good. And there's lots of good stuff there. Search my Facebook page and find it, but I'm gonna go with the classic, the original, Joni Mitchell doing River, which is a Christmassy song, so it's actually really good for this time of year.
It is.
James Taylor released it on a cover of it on his Christmas album back in the aughts. Yeah. A million and a half covers, but I couldn't find one that I liked better than the original.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Well, good playlist.
Good playlist.
Good texts. Perhaps the best texts of the lectionary year. And it's been real.
It's been real vinyl.